Spirit Blade Underground, episode 483. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Hello, welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, my review of the Justice League movie, and also one Christian's reaction, namely mine, and a response to the loot box controversy that's been going on in video games for a little while now. It was originally my intention to get back into our look at Ephesians in the In Search of Truth segment, but you know, this loot box thing was just sticking around long enough, and if you're not into video games, I want to recommend that you still listen to that segment, because I think that there's relevant stuff going on in what I'm talking about in that segment that applies to really, I would say, any area of geek entertainment that that you might really find yourself being passionate about, having strong opinions about, or whatever, you know. And when things go south and get disappointing or frustrating in our favorite hobbies, you know. So it's still going to have relevance. But anyway, I apologize if you were looking forward to getting back into Ephesians. Next week will probably be a topical thing as well, but I anticipate the week after next we will be back into the book of Ephesians for at least a couple of weeks, if not more, before I probably do something Christmas-themed, the very last podcast before the end of the year. So, anyway, that's what's going on. Let's get to it. My father once told me that I could use my powers to make a difference. He told me I had a responsibility to help others. He told me I could save this world, save everyone. Then he told me, walk the gerbil, walk the gerbil. Frickin' weirdo. Justice League! The synopsis on IMDb reads, fueled by his restored faith in humanity and inspired by Superman's selfless act, Bruce Wayne enlists the help of his newfound ally, Diana Prince, to face an even greater enemy. And there's really not much more to the plot than that. The movie is largely about establishing a new threat, a big bad baddie bad guy, and Batman is recruiting and assembling team members to stop the threat of the big bad baddie bad guy. That's really the plot. That's kind of the whole plot. It's filled out a little by introducing characters and their backstories enough to create motivations for them to join or not join up with Batman. Since I rarely find stories in fiction interesting, but rather depend on characters to stay invested in a piece of fiction, that I'm glad that they included what character presentation and development that they did. But it still felt too rushed and crammed to me. Now, reportedly, late in the game, I mean, some of you may already know that Zack Snyder was brought in, Joss Whedon, who wrote and directed, I think, both of the Avengers movies. I know he directed both of them, the first two. Has there been a third one? Never mind. I think he was involved in the scripting, too. Anyway, they brought him in, reportedly, after Zack Snyder presented his first cut, and the executives were like, we gotta joke this the crap up. So Joss Whedon was brought in to write some jokes and stuff, and then Zack Snyder shot those kind of after the main shoot. And then during post-production, Zack Snyder just had a tragedy in his life, and so he stepped away from the movie, and they brought on Joss Whedon to edit the rest of the movie and finish it up, you know? So you can imagine me going to the theater and thinking, what is this thing going to feel like, you know? What is the edit being done, presumably, by Joss Whedon? What is it going to prioritize? What's going to hit the cutting room floor, you know? Even if he's trying his best, which I don't know, you know, maybe he is or was, to create a Zack Snyder movie and make decisions in line with what he thinks Zack Snyder would do. At the end of the day, it's another guy doing it, you know? So what is this experience going to be? And then also, even later in the game, A Warner Brothers executive reportedly mandated that the movie be no more than 2 hours long. All previous DC movies have been over 2 hours, with some of them, I think, coming in at like 2 hours and 20 minutes, 2.5 hours. So I think a lot of them have been significantly over that 2 hour mark. Some character moments from the trailers did not appear in this cut of Justice League. So it seems, my impression is that character focus may have been what they sacrificed to reduce that runtime and get it down to 120 minutes. The villain Steppenwolf, who in the comics is a servant of big bad DC villain Darkseid, this cosmic villain, you know, who was around before Thanos, I'm pretty sure. But anyway, blah blah blah. I won't get on that. I don't need to add fuel to that fire. Steppenwolf is the servant of the big bad Darkseid of the DC universe, but in this movie, Steppenwolf is mostly just a force of destruction and dominance. His connection to Darkseid is very thin. I think Darkseid, the name is mentioned once, with no explanation of who he is, or no mention of the planet Apocalypse. I don't think he was just like this force from out of nowhere that came, and he's just come. He's been here in the past. He's here again to wreak havoc and dominate and da 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 da. But you know, there was just no, like, as far as like the motive and substance of who that character is and what makes him tick, there was just like, it was empty. It was empty. And so he felt like just a force of destruction rather than a character. Just a threat, you know, just a plot device. Even as a threat, though, I didn't find him that threatening to the heroes or the world, certainly compared to previous DC Zack Snyder movies, and even compared to, you know, like the non-Zack Snyder, the Wonder Woman movie, you know. And maybe, I can't remember my thoughts on Suicide Squad. That's the one DC movie I've had mixed feelings about. I really have enjoyed Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, and Wonder Woman, just to give you a frame of reference. There was one, like, poor Russian family that they kept cutting to and showing us the trouble that they were having because of all the horrible stuff that Steppenwolf was doing in the world. But that was about it, I felt like. I don't remember them cutting to show, like, a larger scale amount of destruction and worry and terror that people were experiencing. I just don't remember. Is my microphone on? Oh, good, it is. Uncut. I just didn't feel the sense of threat, you know. Now, briefly at the beginning, there are signs of hopelessness in the world because of the death of Superman. We're still in the fallout of that in this story. But after that, it's mostly just talk, where I prefer show, don't tell. Show me that the world feels hopeless instead of just saying the world has no hope, you know. And I felt like largely what they were doing is Batman saying, there's no hope without Superman. Or when people saying, yeah, the world is in a place of not having hope. And da-da-da. So I heard people talking about the world being without hope, but I wanted to see it more. Because that just seeing that without people just blah, blah, talking about it, that's what's going to, I think, make me feel it more. For my taste, I'd enjoy this whole movie a lot more if it was just allowed to breathe a bit more. So many moments just didn't matter to me. When they could have, if they had spent a little more time establishing a sense of danger or defeat. There are three major moments in this movie I can think of. I won't give details. And each of them, I wanted to feel so much more powerful and gratifying to see good triumph in the midst of these, like, hopeless, what should have felt like hopeless circumstances. But instead, victory just felt too easily won, with very little price being paid that I could see to bring it about, especially compared to the prices that have had to be paid in previous DC movies. The movie definitely has more jokes, many that come from Ezra Miller as the Flash, but they're peppered, you know, throughout all the characters. The jokes, especially of Ezra Miller's Flash, were hit or miss for me, but I still got more faint chuckles out of this flick than most superhero movies I've watched that go for laughs. So at least there was that, but I am not a good judge of what you're likely to find funny. So, I mean, you give that whatever weight you think it's worth, which is probably nothing. Despite what felt like a crunched edit to me, I still brought with me the dramatic weight of what I felt watching Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman and Wonder Woman. So when there was emotional payoff and resolution for characters in these movies, I legitimately felt something. I just wanted to sit in those feelings a bit longer. My hope is that we'll get an extended cut that will bring more of these kinds of things back into the movie, assuming they do exist on a cutting room floor somewhere. But that may not happen if Zack Snyder is still taking time away from work and life light of the family tragedy that took him away from finishing the movie in the first place. As it stands, I enjoyed this movie and its connection to the other DC movies enough that I'll definitely buy it, even if an extended cut is not made available. I just didn't feel the epic weight in Justice League that I felt in those other movies that I mentioned. Because for me, epic is not just about bigger explosions and a larger scale, it's about dramatic weight and significance. And in that realm, this movie was a step back for me. Now, talking about the cast a little bit, the returning cast all did a fine job, although Ben Affleck, oh my gosh, there's someone doing yard machine blowing outside. But it's uncut. I'm going to keep going. The returning cast all did a fine job as far as I'm concerned, although Ben Affleck felt more like Ben Affleck than Bruce Wayne to me when he was out of the mask, probably due to having more jokes in his dialogue. Henry Cavill also felt a little artificial and less human to me when he wasn't in scenes involving Clark's loved ones. He felt a bit to me like the 1950s father I never had, which I think some Superman fans may like. That is a legitimate take from the history of Superman that you can take that character in. He also cracks a couple of one-liners that just didn't seem to fit with his personality that was established in previous movies. Again, in superhero movie action, I prefer show, don't tell. I don't want your wisecracks in combat to diffuse the tension, especially if you don't give me enough time to feel any tension at all in the buildup. Now, that said, much of Cavill's Superman still felt consistent enough to me, consistent enough with previous movies for me to buy into it a little more often than not. I like this new take on Aquaman from Jason Momoa. It feels like a wild member of some heavy metal band, you know, that's the king of the seas. Well, I don't think he's king yet. I'm not sure. There's not a lot of background information they give, just enough to kind of give you a sense of how he feels about life and his place in the world. And Jason Momoa felt like a great fit for this take on Aquaman, so I have no complaints about his performance. Ezra Miller felt okay as Barry Allen slash Flash, but maybe just slightly overdone for my tastes in the way he expresses himself and the humor and his quirkiness. I wish it would have been a little more subtle and a little less frequent. My guess is that many people will really like him, though. I'll hold out my final opinion on that casting and kind of the direction that they're doing with him and that performance until, like, say, maybe a Flash solo movie where we really get a broader sense of just, you know, who this character is. Okay, so there's lots of CG in this movie. The villain is CG. Cyborg is mostly CG. The environment and the climax and other places is CG. These days, CG is just something I've had to accept. Bad CG doesn't make the movie significantly worse for me because, to my cursed eyes, even the best CG often still stands out like a sore thumb, just looking, you know, reminding me of like a highly detailed cartoon, you know. So for me, you know, even though some people might say, oh, well, this CG was good or that CG was bad, totally took me out of it. For me, almost all CG, I just have to kind of like shrug and accept because it sticks out really strongly to me. The dramatic weight connected to the CG makes it less visible to me, however. And since this movie lacked a lot of that dramatic weight for me, there was a lot more of me just having to shrug and accept what I was seeing than I felt I had to do in, say, Batman versus Superman. I don't always talk about the music. I want to talk about the score briefly. Danny Elfman does the score for this. And I can't remember if he's done the score to any previous DC movies. I'm not sure. But anyway, what I noticed him I noticed him in the opening credits, his name in the opening credits. And maybe that made the music stand out a little bit more to me. I don't know. But it was interesting. He subtly brings back the old Michael Keaton Batman theme, which I thought was really interesting. At first, I didn't quite catch it because it's often buried by slight melodic modification, half representation, or just kind of like the chaos of various sound effects and action going on. But it's there, and it's there repeatedly. That was confirmed when in the closing credits they even credit that theme specifically. I love Elfman's early film work, but it felt a little too melodramatic for me in this movie at times, as though the score felt the need to tell me how to feel in a given moment, you know, like an exaggerated version of what I was feeling, much more exaggerated than what I was actually feeling, but just to kind of illustrate a little bit, you know, imagine watching a drama and it's kind of a sad moment, and then you hear this opera singer come in or some guy, "This is very sad now," you know, it's just like, okay, I know, now you're totally taking me out of it, you know. So there were times where just kind of like some subtle or less than subtle choices in Elfman's score actually resulted in hindering my emotional connection to the movie a number of times. Okay, so I when I take in a movie or any kind of like a geek entertainment or whatever, I try to ask myself, is there anything of worthwhile, moral, philosophical, or spiritual, or theological significance, anything like that going on here that might stimulate worthwhile thought or conversation? I don't know. Probably only maybe in kind of like a meta type sense for me as I watch this movie and kind of reflect back on it. It seems like the movie wants its theme to be hope. The word appears peppered throughout the script. The final voiceover of the movie, provided by Lois Lane, almost feels like an apology for the darkness of previous films and a promise that these movies will be more hopeful from now on. But for me, I need to feel hopelessness in a story before hope has any dramatic power. And a sense of hopelessness barely registered for me while I was watching this movie. That said, as someone reminded me today, there is a lot of unhappiness outside of the theater that a lot of people are experiencing. I've considered this before and even suggested a theory a little while back on the Christian Geek Central forums, suggesting that those who are currently experiencing difficulties or pain in life, or who have experienced those things intensely in the past, bring plenty of their own feelings of hopelessness with them through their daily routine. And so when they go to entertainment, they're ready to get to the positive outcome in fiction much more quickly rather than sitting through a heavy setup to that victory. You know, they're ready for the payoff when they sit down to watch the movie. They don't need the you know, time spent in the grim tension and the weight of hopelessness in order to be ready for and to feel that victory. So, and I would say that so far, at least anecdotally, there seems to be at least some validity to my theory as I think about individuals I know personally, their struggles, their troubles, and their feelings about Zack Snyder's DC movies compared to, say, the Marvel movies. And although I don't bring a history of pain into the theater with me, I think I can agree with those who do that it is good to see movies trying to highlight the value of hope, even if they themselves can't give us real hope at the end of the day. All right, well, I have no idea what your tastes in movies are, but if I were a time traveler, I would go back in time and say, Peter, actually, dude, skip this one for now. Wait, Redbox it. It's not going to be the movie that you wanted, but you're invested enough in these characters that you're going to get something out of it. And so you'll probably want to add it to your collection. And who knows, maybe when it reaches home video, you'll have the option of an extended cut that will give you what this cut was lacking for you. It's rated PG-13 for sequences of sci-fi, violence, and action. I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, POSTOS, Helix Reviews, and the Retro Rewind podcast. For more information about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
Well, not going on just yet, but coming up, starting November 23rd at spiritblade.com, there's going to be a big Christmas sale that's going to run from November 23rd through December 10th. I think the 23rd is Thanksgiving. I'm actually going to launch the sale sometime on the 22nd, just so I don't forget, and then probably shut it down sometime on the 11th. But anyway, the 23rd of November through December 10th, I'm going to be just offering some huge discounts on specifically gift-oriented items that are at spiritblade.com. So audio drama CD sets and also gift codes. I'm not going to be offering, you know, just across-the-board discounts. Hopefully you took advantage of the free download day that we had not long ago. But this sale is more more to hopefully encourage you guys to consider giving as gifts some of the things that we have over at spiritblade.com. So audio drama CD sets and gift codes are all going to be significantly discounted at spiritblade.com. November 23rd through December 10th. This week at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, you can see by now my videos for both the loot box controversy and my Justice League review. And while you're there, if you want to like, share, and or subscribe, all those things help to grow the channel and the community. Gosh, I didn't even check to see. Have we hit 1,000 yet on the channel? Let's see, 1,000 subscribers. Where's the thing for... How can I tell how many people have subscribed? I don't think I can see it when I'm logged in to as myself. But but like yesterday or the day before, we were 5 people away from hitting 1,000. I don't know what I'm going to do when we hit 1,000 or what I should do. So if you have any suggestions, that'd be great. I don't know what you're supposed to do when you hit 1,000. I know we should celebrate it, and I'm, you know, whatever. I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. Oh, this is, I'm in the no zone. The no zone for me is where you have said yes to too many things. And so as a result, you are scrambling and clutching and clawing to try and get them all done. And various things suffer as a result of you overbooking yourself. And so I need to be saying no to things for a while when opportunities come up to get together with somebody or serve in some way. It's like, I've said yes to so many things. I just need my gut reaction to be no for a little while until things settle down. So, good gravy. Anyway, what else here? Oh, yeah. The question or topic of the week this time was posted by Rohelf on the Christian Geek Central forums. The topic being things you want to see more of in geek entertainment. And she writes, what things do you wish we had more of in modern geek entertainment? This could be anything from minor character elements to whole genres. Anything you think is currently lacking and which you'd like to see rise from obscurity or make a comeback. So guys, you can leave your 2 cents regarding that topic either on our Facebook page or Twitter, and or you can follow the link from either of those places to our forums and actually join the full-fledged conversation going on there. Some interesting stuff so far on that. What else? I think that's about it. I would be grateful if you'd leave a review of our audio dramas on iTunes or Amazon. Reviews and ratings for this podcast on iTunes or other podcatchers would be great as well. All right, that's enough of that. Let's keep going.
The truth will set you free.
Truth. That which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
If you're into video games, you're probably aware of the recent controversy surrounding microtransactions and more specifically loot boxes. I've got some thoughts I want to share related to the subject, and I apologize if you notice me reading. I just wanted to gather my thoughts a little bit before sharing them. A number of full-price PC and console video games that were released recently, including Middle-earth Shadow of War and Star Wars Battlefront 2, feature in-game packages filled with random items or bonuses that will aid your progress in the game. And these you can buy these loot boxes. They've been compared to the booster packs sold for collectible card games like Magic the Gathering in that you use real-world money to buy random in-game content that can then be used to help you along in the game. Accusations have been passionately flying right and left as gamers and games media personalities verbally lash out at those they believe are responsible for preying upon children, gambling addicts, and players in general. The big question that's being asked or attempted to be answered by many as well is, who is at fault here? Is it the developer for how they specifically go about implementing loot boxes in the game design? Is it the publisher at fault for mandating that loot boxes be included to begin with? Is it the player for a lack of self-control? Well, right now, I'm not looking to weigh in on the question of fault. I think that there are a lot of folks out there that are more equipped to do that, and certainly a lot more that have been talking about it already. So I'm going to go down a little bit of a different track. And what I want to talk about isn't intended as a counter argument to any attempts at figuring out who or what is at fault here. I think if there is some predatory or immoral actions going on in the design of these games, then it's good for it to be brought to light. Now, I may question how some people go about shedding light on the guilty, but that's a different topic, and one that we'll actually be getting into in a more broad and general sense soon as we continue studying the book of Ephesians. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that. I want to talk about how we, as Christian geeks specifically, should respond when something in our entertainment disappoints or frustrates us. There's a lot of anger being expressed over loot boxes right now. And there is such a thing as righteous anger on behalf of the victim. So I don't want to eliminate that as a possibility here. But even when people will kind of like, you know, label their anger as righteous and stuff, with all the anger that's flying around right now, most of the anger I've seen being expressed over loot boxes, I mean, I've got my doubts about how righteous it actually is, regardless of what they say, you know, maybe motivating them. It seems that most of the anger is the result of individuals being frustrated that their personal enjoyment of something is being disrupted by an element that they strongly dislike. Now, I'm in support of customers communicating negative feedback to creators and to publishers. We have a long way to go in learning how to do that with both honest clarity and compassionate grace, but negative feedback itself has an important place in creativity. Hard as it's been for me to hear, it's shaped my own work, and I think for the better. So I think it's good for fans to communicate dissatisfaction with creators. It's the anger coming with that negative feedback, or the verbal attacks, the insults, whether, you know, in your face or just kind of like passive aggressive superiority and stuff. You know, there's these attitudes and words and stuff that seem to be fueled by the anger around this whole situation. And it's that anger that concerns me a bit. I wonder how misplaced or disproportionate that anger is, considering that the far greater problems in the world that we don't vent about on Facebook. I mean, what does it say about me? This is something I've done. When I rant for 3 pages about how much I hated the DC Comics miniseries Final Crisis. If you hunt down, I posted that, an article of that. I ranted about it on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast years ago. But even while I was doing that, what does it say that I was doing that, but I don't even think about the women who are daily being objectified in entertainment media or sold in sex trafficking? Children are daily being neglected or abused by parents or other family members, and they're being scarred for life because of it. My own selfishness causes me to neglect loving and serving the people that are around me. These are all huge injustices. This is not the way the world should be. So these are all huge injustices with a long-term impact. So why am I getting a funk over like a movie letting me down, you know? I think a lot of times when we find ourselves getting angry or genuinely like bummed out, you know, like because of disappointments in entertainment, you know, I mean, like put in a funk for like the rest of the day or something. That can happen, you know. It's happened to me, certainly. You know, we're really looking forward to something, and we got on the hype train, and it lets us down, and then we're kind of in a funk, and it affects our mood, you know, in the rest of the things we're doing the rest of the day. Or we get, you know, we start kind of getting angry, and just whenever we bring to mind that game or that movie or whatever, that bit of entertainment that really disappointed us, really let us down, you know. I think when we find ourselves there in that headspace, it's because we've placed too much importance on entertainment. We've counted on it to provide something or do something for us that entertainment just isn't meant to provide or do. Maybe that's escape from our problems that we wanted to get from it, or a sense of identity, which maybe is more of almost on a subconscious level. Or maybe it's an ever-increasing sensory enjoyment. We're just bored, you know, and we just require greater and greater and more, you know, more fantastic and excellent. You know, we just require that our entertainment constantly be raising the bar, or we just get bored, you know, and we get into a funk or whatever. Or maybe we're looking for the experience of a world and a life that's greater than our own. Maybe we're looking to entertainment for these things, but entertainment just isn't equipped. It's not meant to provide those things. The problem is entertainment only creates a fleeting illusion of fulfilling those desires. It's only temporary relief or distraction from what troubles us. It doesn't deal with the problems in our lives that are troubling us. It provides only a false sense of identity, you know, when we are at the top of the leaderboards in some online game or something like that, or when we get the satisfaction of immersing ourselves in a world where we are empowered, you know, that's just temporary, and it's an illusion. Entertainment has limits and expiration dates in providing pleasure. It can only give us so much pleasure, and the new hotness eventually is the old coldness, you know, no matter how cool and exciting it is. And the worlds and the lives that entertainment presents are only in our imagination. imagination. The book of Ecclesiastes describes how the pursuit of pleasure is ultimately vanity. When we try to like go to pleasure and entertainment to satisfy us and to give us a full life, you know, and to get the most out of the experience of living this life, you know, for these decades that we have here. When we go to entertainment or pleasure for that, it's vanity. It's ultimately pointless. It ultimately cannot satisfy. There's an inexhaustible supply of longing that we have for things, and entertainment just can't rise to that challenge. It's easy for me to feel like I need a certain amount of entertainment. Talking about, you know, putting entertainment in the wrong place, giving it the wrong sense of proportion, which is what Ecclesiastes is kind of saying is just foolish. You know, it's easy for me to feel like I need a certain amount of entertainment. I can justify that feeling and do frequently by saying that I need to unwind or I need to rest and recuperate if I'm going to be useful to anyone. You know, if I'm going to do the things that God wants me to do, to give energy to people when I'm an introvert and I'd rather just be alone. I don't want to invest energy in other people. I don't want to be social or whatever, you know, or whatever God has put in front of me as an opportunity to serve him and to love others. You know, it almost always takes energy. And so I can say to myself, okay, I can expend that energy, but at some point I need to rest or I'm going to burn out and then I won't be any good to God or anyone else. You know, and so I can say to myself, I need to rest. I need this time tonight to recuperate so that I can be, so I can serve God and do the things he's calling me to tomorrow or later on today or whatever. What's tricky about that is that it's true to some degree. And because it's at least partially true, I can miss it when I make enjoyment of entertainment a higher priority than I should. I can totally miss the fact that I'm doing that. I get stuck in this kind of zoomed in perspective of like, you know, what I'm wanting right now, what I feel like I need right now, instead of the zoomed out perspective we see in Hebrews 13:5. Hebrews 13:5 in the ESV reads, "Keep your life free from love of money and be content with what you have. For he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you." That's really significant. Now we might say, "Oh, it's just the fat cats and the corporate suits over at publishing companies like EA. They're the ones that love money. I don't love money, you know." But money, most often, I would say, is a means of getting material things that either our bodies need, or probably more often than we are really willing to label them, things that we just want. You know, things that just bring comfort or enjoyment or pleasure, you know, into our lives. You know, and so I think this warning applies to the love of the things, the comforts, the pleasures, the entertainment that money can buy for us. And I think also it even applies to certainly the book of Ecclesiastes applies to pursuit of pleasure even when it doesn't cost us anything. Because you might say, "Well, I'm not spending money on my MMO. I'm just, you know, playing it and enjoying it, da-da-da-da, and then I get angry and it disappoints me." Well, it's still the pursuit of pleasure that ultimately Ecclesiastes says, this isn't going to give you ultimately what you really, want in terms of like a full, rich life, you know. Looking at this verse again, "Keep your life free from the love of money and be content with what you have. For he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you." See, I think this verse recognizes that we go to money to find fulfillment and pleasure and security. And that's why it's relevant for him to respond to that, the writer of Hebrews, by reminding us that we've been promised that God will never leave us or forsake us. Because he's the one that we should be going to ultimately for our sense of security, our sense of fulfillment. When you and I give too much priority to entertainment, we actually become slaves to it. We wouldn't think of it that way, but really that is what's happening. This is implied by what Jesus warns regarding our relationship to money. In Matthew 6:24 in the ESV, Jesus is saying here, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money." And we can find ourselves, just because we place so much importance and significance on what money can give us and what entertainment can give us, that we make that our priority and it drives everything that we do. I mean, so often as geeks, our finances and our emotions get wrapped up and dependent upon how much we enjoy the next hot game, book, movie, or TV show episode. And when that happens, when disappointment in entertainment leads us to like this downcast funk or kind of a stewing anger, I think chances are good that we've fallen into loving something that we shouldn't. And we might say, well, you know, I don't really love this, even though, you know, we say, oh, I love this or whatever, you know, hyperbole really clouds, I think, the discussion here. So it's that makes things a little bit tricky. But let's look at 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 and 17. In the ESV, it reads, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh and the desires of the eyes and pride in possessions, is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away along with its desires. But whoever does the will of God abides forever." The Greek word for love here means to love dearly or to be contented with. We're not meant to love dearly or look for life contentment in our entertainment. Now, it's great to enjoy our hobbies and our nerdly delights. I mean, after all, everything good in life ultimately has its source in God. We should recognize that and thank Him for it when we experience pleasure and enjoyment in entertainment. That's something that it's good for me to remember as I, you know, get ready to go see a movie. So I put that out there for you to consider too. When the credits are rolling and you're walking away from a movie you really enjoyed, why not take a moment and thank Yahweh for enabling and bringing about the creativity and all these different people for creating creativity to begin with? Or maybe we could say that's intrinsic to His being. But anyway, that's a theological discussion I won't get into. But anyway, James 1:15 in the ESV says, "Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change." So we should thank Him and praise Him for these things that we enjoy, even that are created by, you know, non-believers, because He is the source of all good things. But if we dearly love our hobbies, if we cling to them and view them as our source of contentment, which will lead to anger and funks that we can get into when we're disappointed by it, when we get that deep into our devotion to our hobbies, we're failing to pursue a love of God. The more we love God, the more we'll see Him as our source of rescue from our troubles instead of video games or movies or whatever it is. We will see Him as our source of identity rather than what we accomplish on leaderboards or what we experience in a simulated world. We will see Him as the source of all sensory enjoyment and praise Him and thank Him for that and recognize that one day we will get complete and full and rich and, you know, as great as it can be, possibly eternally increasing sensory enjoyment with Him by just by nature of being in His presence for all of eternity. He is the ultimate source of those things now, and He will be the ultimate fulfillment of those things in eternity. And He is the source of a life far greater than what we have now. In pursuing God, we'll increasingly be reminded that this world just falls infinitely short. It's never going to match up to that inexhaustible longing and hunger we have for bigger and greater things. You know, and we'll start to realize as we pursue loving God and understanding who He is and what He has done for us now, what He is doing for us and what He will do for us in eternity, the more we pursue a love and devotion to Him, we're going to see how this world falls infinitely short. And we're going to recognize that, you know, we really shouldn't expect that much from it. And don't get me wrong, as I said before, I think it's good to give feedback to content creators and hopefully in a way that is both clear and sensitively compassionate toward them as human beings. We should want all creative types to pursue excellence and integrity, and we should reward and encourage them for doing that. But in the meantime, we should also aim to not be enslaved by our entertainment so that we have the strength and the freedom to resist a purchase that we may regret or be disappointed by. We can minimize the risk of that happening by waiting for reviews instead of getting on the hype train and feeling like, I gotta have this right now to be a part of the big experience that everyone else is having and right now, you know. We can wait. We can wait for reviews. We can wait for more information to reduce the risk of disappointment, you know. And especially that can come with, you know, committing our limited funds to something, you know. And when entertainment is in its proper place, and we are expecting the right things from it, as opposed to things that we shouldn't expect from entertainment, when we put entertainment in the right place, then we get all the good without the bad. We get the great experiences without the frustration. It becomes a blessing when it's enjoyable, without being a wound when it's not. Feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we have to hear from you to do that. You can send an email or audio file recorded on your phone to me at paeter@spiritblade.com. All right, that's it, guys. Stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God allows it, I'll be sharing more video game talk as I bring a double dose of my bookshelf tour. Till then, please consider supporting the work of Christian Geek Central and Spirit Blade Productions by purchasing an audio drama, leaving a donation, or becoming a Spirit Blade Insider. You can get more information from our About page at spiritblade.com. Thank you guys so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week, and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at christiangeekcentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit spiritblade.com. Thank you for listening.
Coming through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
And that was Sons of Moog. Another Klingon episode.
Yeah, as you can probably tell.
Yeah, if you know TNG, you'll know Worf has a brother named Kern that he wasn't raised with. He was raised in the Klingon system. He's all about the Klingons. They've had a few plot lines going on in that storyline. And this is the wrap-up to that, and a very logical one. If you remember in Way of the Warrior, when Worf joined Deep Space Nine, he basically made an enemy out of the whole Klingon Empire and their system and Gowron and all that stuff. Well, Kern was a high-ranking member of that government, and we find out Worf's entire house, his entire royal, I guess, noble house, whatever you call it, they still have some sort of a feudal system, was completely stripped. And everything was destroyed, and they became persona non grata.
Yeah, all their properties were confiscated, Kern lost his seat on the High Council, and this is the first that Worf has heard of it, is when Kern shows up.
Well, Worf does say he did know about it, and he was trying to get a hold of his brother. So it's not like Worf just didn't care. It's a matter of Worf was trying to deal with this stuff, but he could not communicate with people in this now locked off area of space.
But he didn't seem to know the extent of what had happened until Kern gave him the narration.
Well, again, I will argue, Gowron did promise exactly what would happen. In Way of the Warrior. He says, your lands will be seized, all of this, you know, your brother will be kicked off. So these things were announced, and this is basically Worf dealing with the consequences of that. Again, Deep Space Nine, the show where you have consequences to actions. And Kern wants on the station because he wants a Klingon ritual to kill him. And Kim and I were talking, and it really seems like, with the exception of the one episode where they were talking about Kalis like he was a returning messiah like Jesus, for the most part, the Klingons, especially their more spiritual side, seems very related to the Japanese. It's like they have a Norse style about the way they live their lives, and a Japanese culture and ethics and all that.
And have that sense of corporate honor.
Yeah, and
of
so
things that Kern didn't do can affect his salvation, essentially.
Yeah, and so what Kern wants, basically, is to be able to commit ritual seppuku. But he needs someone there with him. I guess to make sure it's done honorably, or I don't know.
Well, and they explain later in the episode, he's not allowed to commit suicide.
It has to be the special ritual.
But he is allowed to have his older brother kill him.
With honor.
Yeah.
It's very convoluted, because you'd think Worf wouldn't count since he doesn't have honor either. I don't know. But the gist of it is, first, I like what they set up. Because as a Christian and as a Westerner, I find the thought of ritualized suicide and euthanasia and corporate honor and all that stuff, I find that ridiculous all the way to abhorrent and offensive. And I don't think that's the way a person should deal with things. On the other hand, I do recognize that not everyone thinks like me. And while I would disagree with that choice, I do agree that they have the right to make that choice. And so they present another good dilemma where it's like, he believes that his afterlife hinges on this too. And so really trying to say that he's not allowed to have his brother kill him and basically an assisted suicide is like telling someone they're not allowed to convert or go to church or whatever. And so it's, I can see both sides of the issue. That's a good kind of dilemma.
Well, and Sisko talks about that. He said, I'm all for religious freedom, but
there are limits.
Your brother on my station, that's not cool, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Janeway had a similar situation, but she was, in my opinion, far less reasonable about it. But that's another episode altogether. After this, we go back and forth, and basically, Kurt has to find a new role in life. He can't go back to where he was. So we see him adjusting, we see him try to take jobs on the station and live with Worf, and, it's, I don't want to say hijinks ensue, because it's not a funny episode.
No, there's no comedy here.
Yeah. It's a good episode, especially if you like the character of Kurt, and it's Tony Todd, the guy who played grown Jake Sisko from The Visitor. Tony Todd is awesome, so I just like the man, and he plays the part well. Kern is a fairly simplistic character. He's just a very stern, absolute kind of guy who's all about the Klingons.
Yeah, he's the serious breed of Klingon, not the Irish Norse breed of Klingon.
Yes. So, yeah, he's not one of the fun Klingons like Kor. But still, he's a good character and he's well played. And let's put it this way. Kern makes Worf look laid back.
Yeah. Think about that for a minute.
Ponder this. this is a good episode. It's not essential because it solves a problem that it raised in this episode. So unless you know Star Trek on larger scale, so you know about his brother, you're not even going to really care about the consequences.
But it's a decent show. It's a good character episode for getting into what makes Worf tick. We really explore how he personally views honor.
Yeah.
How he's able
How he walks that line.
Yeah, how he's able to live with the consequences of his own actions, how he finds his place in the universe. It's a good episode if you're into Klingons, of course.
It's also the first time we see the hint of a blooming romance between him and Dax.
And that will
go somewhere.
There's a scene at the beginning. It opens with Worf and Dax sparring on the holodeck, and Dax is wearing a shirt.
She's wearing a Counselor Troy outfit.
No, this thing goes all the way down. You can see her full cleavage. This cuts down below the boobs. You can see the whole side boob.
Well, it's pretty standard Klingon wear.
But here's what I'm getting, is Worf calls her out on this after they're done fighting.
Claiming it's distraction.
Yeah, he says, you were attempting to distract me with your feminine wiles. And she gets all huffy like, I wore this for me, not for you. And I'm like, lady, please. You're going to work out with a batolith. You're risking a serious Janet Jackson pop out here. I mean, when I go to the gym, I don't wear something like that. Because I'm going to be moving around, and I don't want to flash the world. Even just for my own comfort. That's not cool. So the only reason I can assume that you're wearing this thing is for the sexy. But you tell yourself what you need to tell yourself to live, Dax.
In case you haven't noticed, Kim's kind of... She's partial to fashion BS. So... That was one of our top 10 episodes. That was all her idea was the worst fashion disasters. And the Klingon boob hole was one of them.
Yeah, and Dax was guilty of Klingon boob hole.
But anyway, we get the first hints of a romance there, and that will pay off, of course, if you don't already know. Sorry for the spoiler, but it's not that big of a spoiler. That's about it for this episode. Again, forgettable but valuable episode. Next time we'll see, not the worst, but it's another message show. And unfortunately, that one is going to be more essential because of where things turn in that
one. It's not only a message, but prepare for Ferengi antics.
Yes, it's
friends.
A Ferengi message show. Get ready for Bar Association, where we learn about how unions are awesome. We'll see you then.